human in
Someone that part of you, a lot among you, knows. No, Deborah was a PhD, did the PhD at LAN already four years ago. You concluded something like that. Then she moved to UC Davis in California, and more recently to Riverside, right? At LAN, she graduated with Laurence Tress. Mm-hmm. And soon she will move for another postdoc in September. I'm sorry, I should say to Highway. Okay, and with this, I can let you start. Thank you, Deborah.
Okay, share my screen. Can you all see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Just to specify one thing is that I'm actually at UC Santa Cruz right now. I started like a year ago. Actually just yesterday, I transitioned from being postdoc to being a researcher. So now I'm feeling it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wasn't aware.
Yeah, it just happened yesterday. It's such a pleasure to be alum again, even if it's just virtually. I really have fond memories of my time alum during my PhD, and it always holds like a special place in my heart. People in the audience that know me know that most of my research so far was focusing mostly on galaxy kinematics at redshift one or so. But today I'm going to talk about something quite different. It's a work that I did in collaboration with Victoria Strait and Marusha Braddock and others. Looking further back in time in the history of the universe, and specifically at the epoch of ionization. And what is the epoch of ionization? It's basically that time in the universe history when the first stars and galaxies start to form and reionize their surrounding, which was filled with the neutral hydrogen and opaque to the radiation. So we still really unclear how long the reionization process lasted and how it proceed, but we know more or less that before redshift 9 or 10, the universe was fully neutral, while by redshift 6 it was already fully ionized. So how can we study the epoch of ionization? So Lyman alpha emitters are considered a good probe for the epoch of ionization. And specifically, if we look at the luminosity function of Lyman alpha emitters as function of redshift during the epoch of ionization, we see that the decrease of galaxies with detected Lyman alpha can be directly correlated to the decrease of in ionized hydrogen. Moreover, there are studies that use the information from Lyman alpha emitters plus theoretical model to infer the fraction of neutral hydrogen in the universe and tracing it with redshift. But it's also interesting to look at the Lyman alpha distribution with redshift, which also can give information on ionization. Particularly, if we look at this plot from Fuller et al. 2020, we see that the fraction of Lyman alpha emitters increase or it may stay more or less flat up to redshift 6.5, and that depends on the UV brightness of the galaxy. But then there is a very sudden drop after that. So what are the candidates for the reionization? I'm gonna, at this point, I'm gonna just talk about galaxies, although other sources have been discussed in the past. But if we think about faint galaxies, we know that these are more numerous than brighter galaxies, as is shown here by the steepening of the UV luminosity function with the redshift. So they make a good candidate for doing the bulk of the job of the reionization. But Lyman alpha is easily scattered by the natural hydrogen, also destroyed by the dust. What we need galaxies that reside in large enough ionized bubbles created by themselves, also by companion galaxy, for Lyman alpha to be able to escape, or also galaxy with the strong outflows. And unfortunately, since the faint galaxy not powerful enough to create such a strong ionizing output. On the other hand, the bright galaxies are more likely to be able to do so. And also, if we look at the Lyman alpha luminosity function during the epoch of the reionization, we see that with redshift, there is not really an evolution in the bright end of this function, while there is a significant evolution in the faint end, which will suggest that bright galaxies can provide a continuous source of ionization during this period. There are also studies that have shown through simulation that UV bright galaxies have higher Lyman alpha transmission through the intergalactic medium than fainter galaxies. But today, actually, I want to talk to you about a case study that actually may favor a predominant role of faint galaxies in reionization. Particularly, I'm going to talk about DP7, and I will explain the acronym a little bit later. But DP7 is one of the about more than 300 redshift candidates that have been found as part of the reionization lensing cluster survey or RELICS. And RELICS is a huge HST treasury program that targeted 41 clusters between redshift 0.2 and 1. So we have observation with the SES, with C3 IR, and also all these clusters have also been observed with the Spitzer IRAC. And the aim of RELICS was indeed to do a systematic search of lens galaxies at high redshift. And the DP7 is indeed one of these lens high redshift galaxies, although it ended up being not very much, just barely lensed, and was found behind the redshift 0.3 cluster MS1008. Indeed, because it's not a lens, it's very faint galaxies, has an apparent magnitude of 27.2. And from a preliminary analysis of the photometry, this galaxy was placed at a photometric redshift of 6.2. A large spectroscopic campaign to follow up redshift candidates, not only in RELICS, but also in other cluster surveys as Hubble Frontier Field, CLASH, or GLASS, have been carried out by Marusha Bradach at UC Davis. And they've been found about 40 Lyman alpha meters between redshift 5 and 7. And DP7 is one of these galaxies that was observe with the ALRIS on CAC, with an integration of 7 hours, and was reduced with a newly developed spectroscopic pipeline, which is called PIPIT, of which I am a developer. And indeed, we found a strong Lyman alpha, which was actually a higher redshift than was expected from the photometry, so at redshift 7. And so this was very exciting, and we started to look at the property of this galaxy. And I just can tell you that they were already pretty puzzling. So what we found is that this galaxy is an extreme Lyman alpha, as a RS frame equivalent with larger than 200 angstrom. And this would suggest that this galaxy may be highly star-forming. However, if we look at the UV beta slope, we get values that are redder than typical star-forming galaxies at this redshift, which instead will suggest a more evolved or dusty stellar population. However, if we look at the Spitzer IRAC color, these are more consistent with the dust-free stellar population models. In addition, we have a hint of a Lyman alpha halo just from comparing the extended size of the Lyman alpha to the size of UV size. Which would suggest that this galaxy may have resided in an ionizing bubble. However, this galaxy is very faint, is about 0.3 L star, this redshift, which is a bit strange that faint galaxies can carve out its own bubble. But this is not everything. This galaxy, in addition, shows two components, two separate components, as you can see in the left on this plot. This is the F105 filter in HST. You can clearly see the two components, and in the inset is a composite color image. And it clearly shows that the two components have two separate colors. This was the reason why we named this galaxy DP7, which stands for dichromatic primeval galaxy at redshift 7. And we also did an analysis of the beta slope, where we fit power law to the UV rest frame UV fluxes, and we found that indeed the southern component shows a red a slope that is more typical of red galaxies, while the northern component shows a slope that is more typical of blue galaxies. So there are galaxies previously discovered that have similar properties to DP7. I mentioned here some of them. You may have heard of them, Masosa, CR7, IMICO, or COLA1. They're all at redshift 6.5. And they all show extended and strong Lyman alpha emission and multiple components with differing colors. And so this study suggests that these galaxies are young and metal poor galaxies with a possible contribution from POP3 stars that are surrounded by a ionized bubble and that they are undergoing a merger or accretion event. However, DP7 really stands out from this sample because it is really the faint UV faintest galaxies with the highest Lyman alpha equivalent with that we know of all these studies, which really makes it a very peculiar galaxy, in addition to the fact that it still shows like the entire galaxy shows kind of a reddish UV slope. We thought about some possible scenarios. It could be an evolved dusty galaxy which is experiencing a rejuvenation due to a star formation event, and that could be coming from the northern component, which is the bluest one, or it can be a merger between an evolved dusty component and a younger, more star-forming component. In either scenario, the strong and spatially extended Lyman alpha emission is a likely evidence of ionized bubble that is created by metal poor star formation. Although to really investigate more these scenarios, we need more more data. And indeed, we are hoping to get more data. We put in a JWC proposal, which we didn't get this time, but we will keep trying. In particular, we were hoping to get near-spec data, which will allow us to map the distribution of Lyman alpha, but also map out the metallicity, ionization, star formation, dust, and look also for outflows. We have an HSC proposal that we are hoping to hear from, which will allow to make better measurement of more precise measurement of the UV beta slope of the two components, which now they have a difference that is less than 3 sigma. So we were hoping to get a difference above 3 sigma. And we can also determine the source of Lyman alpha, since Lyman alpha is actually falling into the 105 filter, F105 filter in HSD. And we also have an ALMA proposal that we are waiting to hear from, which will allow us to compare the C2 with the UV light, and also to look for a velocity offset between Lyman alpha and C2. So hope I convince you that DP7 is really a remarkable source, is an extreme Lyman alpha emitter, is a UV faint galaxy, which is a characteristic galaxy at the epoch of ionization, and it shows two distinct components in the UV with a hint of differing colors. And this is very interesting to follow up to understand the internal processes happening in this galaxy. DP7 is likely experiencing a short-lived stage of the ionizing photo production, and is definitely driven by a complex interaction between different components. This study of DP7 shows that UV faint galaxies are actually likely capable of ionizing their surrounding, and possibly capable of carve out a ionized bubble of their own. However, deep spectroscopic observation of a larger sample of UV faint galaxies is really necessary to understand if there are more DP7 like galaxies out there, and to determine if what would be the role of UV faint galaxy in the epoch of ionization. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. You're the first, I suppose, who speak just for 20 minutes, so leaving a lot of time for comments. So thank you very much. Any comment or question from the participants? I don't see raised hands. Yes, one, Jose, please.
Thank you very much for this presentation. It was it is really indeed an exciting object, and if it is representative of a population, it's really very nice and very interesting study. So thanks for your detailed presentation. I have a question here. Is Lyman alpha the only line or the only spectral feature that you are able to detect? In particular, do you detect for instance, helium 2 1640, for instance, or other spectral signatures that you can identify, even if it is with a low signal-to-noise, or it's the only one?
Yeah, at this stage is the only one. Lyman Alpha is really at the end of the wavelength range for ALRIS, so the instrument that has been observed with. The only line that we were hoping to get was also nitrogen 5, which can be a sign of not broad IGN, but it actually falls into a skyline, so we couldn't really determine if that a line exists. I didn't mention, but we are also hoping to get most fire data, which goes more in the IR, and see if we can get C3 or helium 2 and others.
Okay, well, this is very interesting. Also, I don't know, we do not really comment on that, but given that you have two different separated components, do you see a difference in the photometric redshift PDZ, for instance, in a way that you could suspect here kind of a lensing by an intermediate redshift galaxy or something like this, more complex than the situation that you are, I know it's difficult because you have only this emission line and it's difficult to see where it is precisely located in this complex system. But do you have any, a hint about the possibility of having kind of a more complex system in the sense of, two different redshifts for these components or not? Could you comment on that?
Yeah. The resolution of the Lyman Alpha doesn't allow us to understand where it's coming from exactly. So it's consistent with both components at this point. This is why we are hoping with the JWST to get a more spatial distribution. We don't see other emission lines at shorter wavelengths, so that will suggest that there are not really interlops, foreground interlops, but also we are a little bit limited in the photometry because in IRAC the two components are blended, so we cannot really do a separate set fitting.
Yeah. This is part of the problem, I guess. Yeah.
Well,
in any case, good luck because it is it's very nice work.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Deborah, future plans with JWST?
We're hoping for it, but the proposal we put in this year wasn't accepted. So we'll try next year. Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay. And on a longer term with, ELT? Which is the instruments that you are foreseeing?
These are the main instrument that we are interested in right now, like JWST. HST is a good alternative, I'd say, to JWST at this time, since JWST is not even operative right now. ALMA would be also very, very interesting to follow up. I'm sure like all the other telescope of VLT would be very interesting.
Thank you. Any other comments or question from people working in the field? Curiosity. Are you interested in comparing your results? With some simulation-based studies. I mean, the object and the finding you have is supported by simulation. Is it an interesting question, or is it too early for?
Yeah, it is really a peculiar galaxy. I'm not really aware of a simulation of this type, and I don't think there really exists a simulated galaxy like this. I really think that observations are what are gonna tell us more, but for sure, what is important is to get more UV faint galaxies, because so far, because there's even so hard to find them, there are not very many. And so it would be really interesting to do like a really statistical study.
Okay. Maybe, well, I think that I don't see any question or comment. Maybe the temperature outside is blocking people. So anyway, thank you, Deborah, again. Please stay with connected for a while. And let's see you next week at usual time at 11 a.m. We'll have already a scheduled speaker who is Sebastian. I know his, I don't remember his family name, Sebastian von Hausegger. And that's all. Thank you. Thank you very much. See you next.